Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Horde, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth podcast, the It Comes All Shapes and Sizes edition, as I take an in-depth look at the top offensive and defensive line prospects in this year's draft with line play expert Brandon Thorne. And after talking to Brandon, I'll do my second version of a three-round Bengals mock draft detailing who is still on the board at the time and why I made each of my picks. The Bengals Booth podcast is brought to you by Paycor, proud to be the Bengals' official HR software provider. By AltaFiber, future-proof fiber internet designed to elevate your home, business, and community to a new level. And by Kettering Health, the best care for the best fans. Kettering Health is the official healthcare provider of the Bengals. Now, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. It's the greatest thing since the Alford Packer Restaurant and Grill. My son Sam is a high school senior, and we recently took a campus visit to the University of Colorado, where our tour guide told us an interesting story about one of the dining halls. When it was built, CU students were given the opportunity to name the dining hall with one stipulation. They had to choose a famous Coloradan. The winner, in a landslide vote, was Alford Packer. Who is that, you ask? He is the only man in United States history ever convicted of cannibalism. It was approved by the university's Board of Regents, and the slogan of the Alford Packer Restaurant and Grill is, "Have a friend for lunch." Now, let's get to football. The NFL draft is 2 weeks away, and the overwhelming consensus of the draft gurus is that the Bengals are likely to take an offensive or defensive tackle in the first round. But which one should they select? I discuss that and the state of the Bengals' offensive line this week with Brandon Thorne, an expert on offensive and defensive line play, who is part of the draft coverage team at Bleacher Report. Brandon, we will get to the draft in just a bit, but let's start with the Bengals' offseason acquisition of Trent Brown. When healthy, you have referred to him as one of the most effective pass protectors at the position, with dominant stretches as a run blocker. He'll be 31 this year with 9 years of NFL wear and tear. What do you think the Bengals are getting in Trent Brown?
Exactly what you just said, pretty much, assuming that he is, healthy and, at least going to start the year healthy. It's, a little bit of a chore for him, or has been, to stay healthy throughout a season. So that's really why I think more than anything, he's bounced around at different places throughout his career. But pretty much when he's on the field, I think he's a really good pass protector, and definitely at least a good run blocker, with, like I said, stretches of being able to run behind him, in the run game, almost quite literally, just the way he could cave in defenders, and even just kind of move as well, to get up to the second level here and there as well. So he's one of the more, if not the most athletic, like 350 plus pound offensive lineman in the league, I think, certainly in the conversation. I think he's more athletic than, say Orlando Brown on the other side. It's just Orlando's, like ruthlessly consistent, in terms of availability and things like that. So that's what makes him, as valuable as he is, I think. But in terms of a skill level, athletic ability, I think Trent Brown is a really quality player, at least in the short term.
Do you view it as an upgrade from Jonah Williams?
Yeah, I do. He hasn't played right tackle in, a few years now, but he's one of those unique cases where he probably has, just off the top of my head, 30 starts at left and right tackle, at least. That's just kind of a number that I'm just thinking of off the top of my head. But yeah, so he kind of unique in that regard. But yeah, I do think it's an upgrade, really just for what he can do as a pass protector. I just think it's just a little bit better. He can match up better one-on-one with the higher level pass rushers, I think. And that's really the separator there.
So looking at the group as it stands right now, and obviously this could change after the draft, Orlando Brown Jr. at left tackle, Cordell Volson left guard, Ted Karras center, Alex Kappa right guard, Trent Brown right tackle. How would you describe that group?
I think that group is pretty good. I would say. I don't have like rankings in front of me. I'm not haven't done that yet, obviously. With all the things that still have to play out, but just I would say this is a middle of the pack kind of line, probably. I have questions at, left guard and to a lesser degree center. I mean, I know Ted Karras is he's kind of outperformed what I thought, honestly, because he's always been, from Miami and New England, just kind of either a spot starter, but he's definitely performed at a solid level. But I think you could probably upgrade that position in this draft. So, and then left guard, I think you could definitely upgrade that position in this draft. So those are the two spots, maybe kind of weigh it down a little bit, but I would say there's no glaring hole, which is nice. So pretty good, solid, middle of the pack, I think is a fair assessment right now.
Let's turn to defensive line. The Bengals signed Sheldon Rankins to a 2-year contract this offseason to try to beef up their interior pass rush. He says he's underrated against the run. What do you think overall of Sheldon Rankins?
I like Sheldon Rankins. I think he's probably solid, okay against the run, but more so, why you sign him ideally is, really is because of what he could do as a pass rusher. He has a really good spin move, really a variety of counters, I would say. He's a very crafty pass rusher. And I'm just really excited and glad that he's able to kind of reclaim some of the explosiveness that wasn't always there. He had some pretty serious injuries. I know he had one real serious injury early on in his career, and it looked like he may not regain what he once was. But I, after the last couple seasons, I think he's cleared that bar, and now he's kind of back to what he was early on. And I think he's definitely an above average, if not like very good pass rusher. So yeah, and I don't think Cincinnati's had that. I think BJ Hill's pretty solid in that regard, but now you have two guys that are viable threats rushing the passer interior, on the interior of the defensive line. I don't think Cincinnati's had that in quite a while.
The Bengals wanted to keep DJ Reader. He signed with the Lions instead. How concerned should we be about the Bengals' run defense without DJ Reader?
Yeah, I mean that's the trade-off here. You're improving the pass rush pretty significantly from, Reader to Rankins, but then you're also, going in the other direction in terms of run defense, and it's really a trade-off here. And now, you're going to have to probably replace Reader by committee, and I think it's probably honestly easier to replace a guy like Reader than it would be to lose a similar level player as a pass rusher. I just think that skill set is more valuable. So as much as I love DJ Reader, going back to I think 2017 Houston when I really studied him and fell in love with his game, yeah, I think that's just kind of the reality of it. So I actually kind of like the direction that they went, even though you are gonna experience some loss in the run game or defending the run for sure.
Brandon Thorne is our guest. You can find his articles, film breakdowns, and podcasts at trenchwarfare.substack.com. Let's turn to the draft. Is it a historically good group of offensive linemen, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I've been studying every offensive lineman for 4 years now. This is my fourth year. So I would say it's the best class that I've seen, with 2021 being a fairly close second, and we had a really good class then. But I think it's a little bit better than that. And, it depends on how you want to project some of these tackles, whether you think they're going to stay at tackle or go to guard. I think a few of them go to guard. So I actually think it's a very well-rounded class because of that. You have some high-level tackles, three, four, five of them, that at least high-level talent-wise, probably two, three are going to be really good starters right away, and another couple could be. And then the guys that I have projected inside, I think all could be, pretty much good guards right away. So you have three, four really good guards, and then at center, this class I think is historically deep. In terms of guys who could potentially start games within their rookie contract, not that they're going to be full-time instant starters, but you do have a few of those guys as well. I just think there's a lot of potential throughout this draft at center, in particular. So, yeah, it's a deep, well-rounded class, and it's really fun to talk about. I'm not even done evaluating it yet, so.
So the Bengals have the 18th overall pick. They generally do not trade up in the first round. So for this podcast, we're not even going to consider a trade up. We'll just talk about guys that might be there at number 18. I'm assuming there's no way that Joe Alt will be there. It seems like every single mock draft that I've looked at, he's long gone by the number 18. But after that, several others will be gone, but it's hard to tell which guys because there's kind of beauty in the eyes of the beholder in this draft. So let's take a look at some of the possibilities, at least, beginning with J.C. Latham from Alabama, 6'5", 340. I know you did a film breakdown with him. What do you think of J.C. Latham potentially as the Bengals' right tackle of the future?
I think it'd be a great fit for a lot of teams at right tackle, Cincinnati in particular, just with the way that they operate, especially in the run game. I think it would fit in, complement Orlando Brown well. And, you know, J.C. Latham, I've described as probably the strongest offensive lineman in this class in terms of pure strength, play strength. And, you know, the term vice grips gets thrown around, I think, in scouting circles a little loosely at times, but it is as apt for him as anybody that I could recall over the last 4 years. Truly, he's one of the more difficult guys to work through or to beat going through him. So, you know, just straight line power, and then his anchor ability as well to stop power is really, really good. You know, special, I think, is fair to say. He's kind of in the mold of a Tevin Jenkins or a Darnell Wright last year. It's just he's bigger than both of those guys in terms of length and weight. So, you know, I'm a big fan of him. He's my number three tackle in this class. I have a, you know, kind of a mid first round grade on him, and I think that's probably where he's going to go. So I just think, you know, if all else fails and he doesn't really kind of refine the nuances in his game, specifically in pass protection, he has something to fall back on, and that's elite level play strength. And I think that that is something that I really feel good about betting on with a lot of guys. And I think, you know, with Jenkins and Darnell Wright, you know, just being able to carve out a role, even though, like with Jenkins, couldn't make tackle work, you know, granted he got moved around, that's a whole nother thing, but he's a quality starter now because he's so strong and big and physically imposing, and it's legit. And then Darnell Wright, what he did last year, I think he's going to be probably a quality starter for a while. So I see at least that with Latham. He just has a little bit more upside than those guys, I think, because of his size. And yeah, so I'm a fan.
If he's your third tackle, who are one and two?
Olu Fashanu is number two, and then Joe Alt's number one.
Latham didn't test at the combine or at his pro day. Any red flag there where you're concerned?
No, not really, because I think you kind of know what you're getting, you know, based on just watching him on film. You know, I think he's a, if he did test, it would probably be like, you know, he's a good athlete, not a great athlete. And I mean, but he's, you know, 340 pounds too. So not too much of a red flag for me, honestly. I just, I think, you know, the play strength and the power and the anchoring ability is really what you're paying for, you know, so to speak, in the draft, and can't really measure that with the testing anyway. So I don't think he would have bombed it, you know, or anything like that.
Brandon Thorne is our guest. You can follow him on X at Brandon Thorne NFL. Let's talk about Troy Fa'utanu of Washington next. He's not as big as some of the others, 6'4", 317. Mostly played left tackle in college. Some see him as a guard in the NFL. What do you think of Fa'utanu overall, and then specifically as a potential right tackle?
I'm a big fan of Fa'utanu, and he's my number one guard in the draft. And so, you know, projecting him inside, he's one of maybe two guys who I think have true five position flexibility, along with Graham Barton from Duke. But yeah, I just, you know, I said this on multiple podcasts already, but it's like every time I think about Fa'utanu, you know, I I've listened to, you know, some smart people talk about him. You know, some people see Rashawn Slater and I'm like, yeah, I could see that. Some people have even said Marquise Pouncey at center. I'm like, yeah, I could see that. And then for me, I think the ideal fit for him is as guard. And I see him being a caliber of player as like Ali Marpet was, you know, somebody like that. He's a little bit longer than Marpet was, but some similarities in their game, I think. And I just think his play style fits ideally at guard. He's very aggressive, and that could get him into trouble at tackle, and it did, you know, here and there at Washington. And I just think that that could be a little bit pronounced, you know, in the NFL. That's the difference between him and Rashawn Slater to me, is Rashawn Slater was more patient, more tactful in his approach, whereas Fatanu is much more aggressive and kind of a frenetic energy that he brings to the field that's very different than Slater. So I just think that would be ideal inside. It would be kind of a seamless transition for him, and I see a really high level player. He's one of the four or five best overall offensive linemen in the draft, in my opinion. So yeah, I'm a huge fan of him, and he's, you know, he's one of the best guys in this class.
Up next, Talisi Fuaga of Oregon State, another big man at 6'6", 324. He's been a starting right tackle for the last couple of years, a team captain, the Bengals like that. He was excellent during the Senior Bowl. What stands out when you watch Fuaga?
Large frame, you know, he's well dispersed, you know, like thickness throughout his build, big hands, you know, decent adequate length, but he's very quick. You know, he operated in a run first zone heavy scheme at Oregon State, so it's kind of, you know, fit him, maximized what he did well in terms of as a run blocker. I think he has a case for being the best run blocker in the class. So that's really his, you know, where he wins primarily. Pass protection is good, not great, I'd say. I think really when you dig into his film, even at the Senior Bowl, he has issues protecting the corner against high-level speed rushers who know how to set up their moves. And he's vulnerable to the cross chop technique in particular, getting that outside hand chopped and creating a short corner. You know, I posted 10 clips of that on Twitter. There's more from his tape, and then there's Senior Bowl examples as well. So for that reason, I have him projected inside, where I see like kind of a supercharged Vitae, who has been a, you know, guard in the NFL. He's just more athletic than he was. You could even see shades of like a Mike Iupati, you know, somebody like that as well. So I see a high level guard here. He has all the makings of it. So I'm a fan. You know, I have some reservations with him sticking a tackle as well.
One of the players most frequently mock draft to the Bengals is Amarius Mims from Georgia. He looks like Orlando Brown Jr. and Trent Brown in terms of the size, 6'8", 340. He wouldn't have to start right away at right tackle since Trent Brown is signed for a year. The big thing that everybody always brings up is the lack of experience, only 8 college starts. How big of a concern is that? And what do you think of Mims?
For me, you know, Mims is my fourth tackle in this draft. And, you know, I don't have as much concerns there. You know, I have a high second round grade on him, you know, which for us is a potential impact starter, you know, right on the fringe of first round, like late first, early second, kind of, you know, assuming he's going to go earlier than that. But yeah, not as much of a concern with him because when you watch his film, I don't see many bad habits on his film. So it's really, truly kind of like a blank canvas. And you're working with really, really good tools to make something really special here in terms of how he looks. You know, you mentioned Orlando and Trent Brown on paper. Yeah. But when you look at him, he doesn't look anything like those guys. He's just much more lean. He carries his weight in a way that is rare, I would say, you know, at his size. So just really a truly a physical specimen in a way that you don't often see. Natural pass protecting ability and movement skills is really what stands out most to me and why I, you know, kind of jumped on his evaluation and graded him, you know, what I feel is pretty highly considering he only played 8 games. But yeah, I'm a fan. You know, I think he's one of the four best tackles in the class, and going to a situation like Cincinnati would be ideal, you know, in a lot of ways. There are like Philly, obviously, but yeah, somewhere where you don't have to play right away. You have a good offensive line coach, a good offensive line room with multiple guys that you can learn from that are at least in the ballpark of what you look like, you know, and maybe how you would play a little bit, you know, at least to some degree. So, yeah, that'd be a great fit, you know, I think for Mims to develop and get the most out of him.
Let's circle back to your number two tackle, Olufashinu from Penn State, 6'6", 312, the left tackle for the Nittany Lions. Probably not going to be there at number 18 for the Bengals, but if he somehow was, what do you think of that fit? playing right tackle in Cincinnati since Orlando Brown Jr. is pretty much guaranteed to be the left tackle for the next 3 years.
Yeah, it would be a little bit more peculiar of a fit, but I guess if you dropped it, the value would be great and you'd have to do it in some sense if you're thinking about Mims. So it's just he's ready to go right now. So, you know, having a guy like that on the bench, you know, would be, you know, kind of weird. But yeah, I mean, the value would be great. And for Shanu, I think first and foremost, it's his ability as a pass protector. You know, when he was a 19-year-old sophomore last year, you know, he turned 20 in season, but he was 19 years old. I remember watching him for the first time and right away, you know, wow, like this guy, there's something special about him in terms of how he looks, you know, and in terms of measurables, physical traits, and then how he moves in pass protection in particular. He's, I would say, a pretty significantly better pass protector than run blocker. Although that did kind of even out late this season. You saw some glimmers there of more as a run blocker, which was nice to see. But he's definitely a guy who wins with his pass protection ability. He's strong and just, you know, long. And just his movement skills in pass protection just sort of has an uncanny ability to mirror guys that is, I think, pretty special. And the best football is in front of him. He has 20, 21 starts. He's pretty inexperienced as well, you know, not like Mims, but he hasn't played a whole lot of football yet. And I still think he has a lot of room to improve. He reminds me, he's in kind of that similar vein as like a Ryan Clady, DeBrickashaw Ferguson, you know, those kind of guys who are pass protectors first. So that's kind of what I see with him. And I think he's a really quality prospect. And like Alton, like Latham and Mims and Guyton and all these guys, they're very young. This is a very young class, at least that top 5-6, you know, they're all 21 years old. So, I mean, that's a big part of why this tackle class is so alluring is because these guys are all so young. So yeah, that's another part of it.
So you mentioned Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma. His name pops up on first round mocks along with some others. Kingsley Suamataia from BYU, Jordan Morgan from Arizona, Roger Rosengarten popped up on Mel Kiper's latest mock draft as a first round pick today. When you look at that other crop of guys, do you think that any of them are worthy of the Bengals choosing them at number 18?
On my personal board, I think that would be, you know, a little bit of a stretch. You know, with Guyton in particular, he'd be the next guy. He's my fifth tackle. I have project Jordan Morgan inside at guard. But Tyler Guyton, you know, I have kind of a mid, you know, or so second round grade. And that's just because as opposed to Mims, that was kind of the conversation, you know, for me at least, and even Suamataia is splitting that trio up. For me, I think Guyton does have some bad habits that need to get ironed out, and he is very inexperienced as well. So that, you know, to me is the difference between him and Mims, but he's another guy who's about 6'8", you know, close to 6'8", you know, about 20 pounds lighter than Mims, but he moves even better than Mims, you know, which understandably so being lighter, but he really is truly one of those guys when you watch him, he collides across the field. And at that size, and then he also has a really strong natural anchor. You know, typically if you're a really big guy who moves really well, you know, anchoring is one of those things that's kind of an Achilles heel. He can do that. He can handle the bull rush. He can handle power rushes. It's just in terms of set points and not going too far, not setting short, not getting beat cleanly, you know, because he misaligns his target. That's something that's just kind of reoccurring on his film. So he needs to iron more stuff out, I would say, than a guy like Mims, but the potential is certainly there, you know, to be a potential impact starter, which is my grade. It's just a little bit lower on that spectrum. And if he goes into the right situation, I think that is going to be huge for him. A similar situation that Mims is probably going to need with kind of a veteran room where you know, not a whole lot of pressure to be the guy right away. Even if he plays right away, you know, just going somewhere where he's the second or third or fourth best offensive lineman, you know, to start, I think would be great for him just to kind of ease his transition into the league. But I mean, there's a lot of upside there to be a really good starter. He has the bones, you know, the foundation there to, you know, that if he went in the first round, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Offensive and defensive line analyst Brandon Thorne is our guest. You can find his work at trenchwarfare.substack.com. The Bengals also need a defensive tackle, Two names pop up most frequently as possibilities for the number 18 overall pick, Byron Murphy of Texas and Johnny Newton of Illinois. Do you have a strong preference?
Not really, no. I mean, I haven't really studied these guys. I've definitely seen them both play a fair amount, studying other offensive linemen, and they both flash. They both look like guys who are deserving of this recognition and, you know, probably warrant, you know, a mid to late first round grade. You know, I've always been a little bit partial to Newton, just because I've watched him more. I think that's probably the main reason. And even going back to last year, I remember him being a guy I was like, yeah, this is clearly a guy who's going to start at the NFL. And then this year, you know, did nothing to change that. He actually reminds me a lot of Sheldon Richardson, who, you know, I got to study a good bit throughout his career. He's retired now, but yeah, a very similar sort of player. And that's the kind of ceiling, you know, that I see for him as well, which would be outstanding. That's worth a first round grade. So, but with him, his ability to disengage and to shed blocks and to deconstruct blocks is really what appeals to me so much. So yeah, I really like him. And I think both those guys would make sense for Cincinnati. And, you know, I've been wanting Cincinnati to get better on the interior of their defensive line for a while now in terms of just more juice there. And yeah, I think both those guys would provide, you know, some jolt to that room and make it a strength, you know, which would be awesome.
After losing DJ Reader, the Bengals would love to add a nose tackle type at some point. They've got 10 draft picks. Tavondre Sweat didn't help himself with his recent DWI. How is this crop in terms of run stuffing defensive tackles, as far as you know?
As far as I know, I don't think it's very good. You know, in that way, I think for the most part, you're getting guys who are going to win as pass rushers first, you know, penetrating upfield type of guys who rely more on athletic ability than anything else. Some versatile pieces here for sure. But yeah, in terms of nose tackles, I don't think this is a very good class. Sweat, you know, being one of those guys who could fill that role. McKinley Jackson, I think from Texas A&M is another guy who's a nose tackle who's routinely graded kind of outside the first two, maybe three rounds, you know. So other than that, as far as guys that I've seen, nobody really stands out in terms of nose tackles. So maybe there's another guy out there, a dark horse that I don't know about. Like I said, I'm not, you know, kind of grinding through this position like I am offensive line. But yeah, just, you know, from my opinion, I don't think that there is really a lot of options, you know, higher end options in this class.
So with 10 draft picks, based on what you've been telling us on this podcast, the Bengals have the opportunity certainly to address right tackle, potentially a Ted Karras successor at center, and maybe somebody that can compete at left guard with Cordell Volson.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. I mean, I'm a little biased, you know. I'm always partial to strengthening that position. But at the same time, I like to think that I can, you know, I could try to reach, you know, kind of an objective level, you know, to some degree. And I think with Cincinnati, I don't have a lot invested, you know, in any team really. So, but just looking at them as an outside observer, somebody does like offensive line play. I don't know that it is like a super pressing need, honestly. Definitely addressing one spot for sure, you know, with a lot of draft capital, first round pick would be great. But like, you know, restocking the position, I don't know that it is super pressing for them, considering, you know, Cordell Volson, although, you know, replaceable, still pretty young, you know, and you would think that he could, you know, kind of touch up some areas of his game and still just incrementally get a little bit better. So if that's your weakest link, then yeah, I mean, you're probably not too pressed for resources there. Although I will say that the depth, you know, is certainly in need of a boost, you know, as I would say 99% of offensive lines are, probably 95%. So getting a high end kind of guy with that first round pick and then addressing it later, maybe late day two or early day three, you know, would probably be ideal. And I think you could get a really quality depth player at that spot. So that's probably the way I would go. In, you know, for most teams, honestly, you know, getting a day one, day two pick and a day three pick on the offensive line every draft, that's probably a pretty good idea.
All right, a couple more topics for our guest, Brandon Thorne. The Bengals' first round pick last year was a pass rusher in Miles Murphy. Mm-hmm. How did he do in his limited playing time as a rookie?
I think that there were some flashes there, and that's, while not maybe ideal, for a guy where you drafted him, you'd want a little bit more consistency there. I do think that there were the flashes that you saw at Clemson as well. I remember the game a few years ago against Ike Ekwonu, from NC State. He had a really good game against him, and just he has first round ability. It's just a matter of stringing it together consistently, being more consistent with his technique, against the run, so he could be on the field more, so then he could afford himself more opportunities to rush the passer. I think it's about reps and time and earning that ability to be on the field more. And once he is, you would just think, especially being in a good environment like Cincinnati, good coaching, you have a guy like Trey Hendrickson to kind of follow and emulate. I mean, this is a good situation for him to maximize his potential. So, I would say that it was kind of an uneven year as a rookie, but I do see maybe some of what Cincinnati sees in terms of like why you're so enticed by him, because just at his size, some of his explosive ability, his ability to string moves together at times and really beat guys quickly. I mean, yeah, there's something there. It's just it's about rounding out the edges and being more consistent with technique and things like that. So the details. So yeah, I think that's kind of where he is right now.
One of the things you do at Trench Warfare is really break down pressures. How did Trey Hendrickson fare last year?
In terms of fewest snaps per pressure, he's like in the top 20, top 15, 20 or so, right around like the Rashawn Gary, Jadeveon Clowney, Alex Highsmith kind of range in terms of efficiency, in terms of pressure wise. And then I have another thing for high quality pressures per snap, and he's in a similar kind of range as well. So I would say it was a good year by his standards. Maybe not his best year, but I don't recall if he was dinged up a little bit too. I don't remember that, but yeah, I just think Trey Hendrickson is what he is at this point, and he's a really good player, a really good pass rusher. And even if my numbers in those couple metrics didn't totally reflect it, being like a top 10 guy, I think he's a top 15 or so edge rusher in the league. And that may seem like it's a slight, but I think people need to remember just how deep this position is, edge rusher, that is. It's just, there's some great players, in the top four or five, and then there's some very good guys just kind of like in the top 20. But what I will say about Trey last year, I also grade every sack, and he finished first among edge rushers, tied with TJ Watt in my sack score metric, which measures the quality of sacks. So he had 12 high quality sacks last year, which was tied with TJ Watt for the most in the NFL. So, he really got after it as a pass rusher in terms of bringing down the quarterback for sacks and three strip sacks. And yeah, so he was kind of a monster in the sack department last year, and pressures were a little bit more, top 20-ish range.
Final question for Brandon Thorne. The Bengals lost their offensive coordinator, Brian Callahan, to the Titans as their new head coach. And that means the Cleveland Browns lost his dad, Bill Callahan, as their offensive line coach. How significant is that loss for Cleveland?
I think it's really significant, especially because his assistant, longtime assistant Scott Peters, also left, took a head job with the Patriots. Even the guy who was his understudy, who maybe could have, at least carried some of what Bill Callahan brought, he's gone too. So it's a total clean slate there. So yeah, I think it's a significant loss. I think Bill Callahan is really on the Mount Rushmore of offensive line coaches, if not all time, certainly within the last probably 15, 20 years, with Jeff Stoutland, Mike Munchak. Those are probably where be the names where I would start. And so yeah, he's one of the very best. He's going to make everybody better. He's going to get the most out of everybody. His attention to detail is maybe unrivaled in the NFL. He's truly a master, tactician, and just his techniques and his ability to teach is tremendous. So losing that is going to be tough, especially because Cleveland may be going through a little bit, of turnover with their offensive line, not at guard, but maybe looking at maybe a new left tackle soon, potentially. And then they have a very young one in DeJuan Jones. I know Jack Conklin's coming back. So, yeah, I mean, you always feel better when a guy like Bill Callahan's there and as opposed to when he's not. So, you know, it's going to be tough, you know, to see how they overcome that and, you know, figure it out.
Bengals fans certainly hope you are right. I am a subscriber to Trench Warfare. It's the only thing like it in terms of studying offensive line play in particular. Tell folks where they can find it and what they get if they subscribe.
Sure. So trenchwarfare.substack.com is where you can find me. You could subscribe monthly or yearly. And throughout the year, I'm studying offensive and defensive line in season, watching every game every week. And, you know, usually focus on one, two players at a time. And then throughout the offseason, I just go back and watch it again, pretty much, you know, not necessarily every game, but certainly a lot of them. I make a lot of player highlight tapes throughout the year for players. So that brings me back, you know, to kind of revisit everything. And I just try to find unique angles to look at offensive and defensive line through for my Substack subscribers, and try to get a lot of players on there. Hopefully going to get some coaches on there soon. But yeah, just trying to shine light on the position, help educate people on the position, and just enjoy it, you know, because I think when people see the real inner workings of the position and what it looks like being executed at the highest level through video, especially, then they really start to appreciate it. It's easy to appreciate offensive line when you're being shown it kind of in the right context. So just try to do that. And thankfully, you know, a decent amount of people were interested in that. And I just try to serve them as best I can.
Well, Bengals fans are fixated on the offensive linemen in this draft. I know they've been looking to learn more about each of these guys, and I really appreciate your expertise and look forward to which guys the Bengals come away with during that 3-day stretch. Brandon, thank you very much.
Yeah, Dan, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
More on the draft in a moment, but first, a quick reminder that the Bengals Booth podcast is brought to you by Paycor, proud to be the Bengals' official HR software provider. By Alta Fiber, future-proof fiber internet designed to elevate your home, business, and community to a new level. And by Kettering Health, the best care for the best fans. Kettering Health is the official healthcare provider of the Bengals. Last week on this podcast, I did my first 3-round Bengals mock draft. That's a total of 4 picks, and Cincinnati has an extra pick in the 3rd round. I chose Washington offensive lineman Troy Fa'utanu in round 1, Florida State defensive tackle Brandon Fisk in round 2, North Carolina wide receiver Devontae Walker with my first 3rd-round pick, and Florida State cornerback Renardo Green with my second 3rd-round pick. Now, time for Dan's Draft 2.0, and I'm going to use the Pro Football Network simulator instead of the Pro Football Focus version this time, since it's likely to give me different choices. Sure enough, Troy Fa'utanu is not even an option this time around. He was one of 4 offensive linemen taken before the Bengals were on the clock. Joe Alt went 6th, Olufashinu 7th, Fa'utanu 13th, and Talisi Fuaga 16th. By the way, Brock Bowers was gone as well. He went 15th to the Colts. But that left me with great options, including offensive tackles J.C. Latham and Amarius Mims, defensive tackles Byron Murphy and Johnny Newton, and LSU wide receiver Brian Thomas. I chose Latham, the 13th overall pick in the draft, according to The Athletic's Dane Brugler, and the Bengals' starting right tackle for many years to come. It doesn't have to be right away, but the Alabama Giant can compete with Trent Brown for the spot this year. If the veteran wins the job, Latham is his backup. And keep in mind that Trent Brown has missed at least 5 games due to injury in 4 of the last 5 years, so there's a decent chance that his backup will be needed. And if Orlando Brown had to miss any time, Trent Brown can move to left tackle and Latham can step in on the right side. The Bengals would be thrilled if Latham is still there at number 18. In the 2nd round, with pick number 49 overall, there are some good defensive tackles available, including Rook Ororo of Clemson, Michael Hall of Ohio State, Chris Jenkins of Michigan, and last week's second-round selection, Brandon Fisk. But I went in a different direction this time and chose wide receiver Malachi Corley of Western Kentucky. He's a sturdy slot receiver who would immediately replace Tyler Boyd in the starting lineup and give the Bengals a great yards-after-catch threat. His nickname at Western Kentucky was Yak King. He's not a speedster. Corley ran a 4.56 40 at his pro day, but he's so dangerous with the ball in his hands that he's been compared to Deebo Samuel. Last year, the Bengals didn't go offense until the fourth round. This year, I'm not waiting that long to add a weapon, taking Corley in round two. With the first of my third round picks, I was able to take one of the defensive tackles that I was thinking about in the second round, Michigan's Chris Jenkins. Frankly, I couldn't believe he was still there at number 80 overall. He's number 36 on Brugler's big board, was a team captain for the national champs, and has a great nickname, the Mutant. His dad, Chris Sr., was a four-time Pro Bowl defensive lineman, and while Chris Jr. is about 60 pounds lighter than his dad at 299, he'll fit in perfectly in the Bengals' defensive tackle rotation. For my fourth and final pick in the first three rounds, I was almost able to take cornerback Renardo Green again, but he went 96th overall, one pick before the Bengals were on the clock. Fortunately, one of my favorite players in the draft was still available, another member of Michigan's national championship defense, slot corner Mikey Sainristil. Sainristil is Mike Hilton 2.0. He's undersized at 5'9 and roughly 180 pounds, but every time I watched a Michigan game last year, he was around the ball making big plays. After playing wide receiver for his first three seasons, Sainristil moved to defense 2 years ago, and last year had six interceptions, two forced fumbles, and three interception returns of more than 70 yards. He's a two-time team captain with experience at inside and outside corner and also on special teams. He's number 43 overall on the Brugler big board, so landing him with the 97th pick would represent exceptional value. Unlike the PFF simulator, the Pro Football Network version doesn't give you a grade, but if the Bengals get Latham, Corley, Jenkins, and Sainristil, I can't imagine it would be anything other than an A+. That's going to do it for this episode of the Bengals Booth Podcast, brought to you by Paycor, proud to be the Bengals' official HR software provider. By Alta Fiber, future-proof fiber internet designed to elevate your home, business, and community to a new level. And by Kettering Health, the best care for the best fans. Kettering Health is the official healthcare provider of the Bengals. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to this podcast, and if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more Bengals fans find us. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.